The Guardian.
L'Afrique est pleine de tristesse de voir nos familles mourir. Ne touchons pas nos malades, ne touchons pas nos mourants. Tout le monde est en danger, les jeunes et les anciens. Il faut agir pour nos familles.
Hello and welcome to the Global Development Podcast with me, Sarah Bosley, Health Editor of The Guardian. The Ebola epidemic is still raging in West Africa and will get worse before it gets better. We ask how we got into this situation in Sierra Leone, Liberia and Guinea, why the World Health Organization was so slow to respond, and what needs to happen in future to prevent a similar disaster. There have now been 13,703 officially registered Ebola cases and around 5,000 deaths, although it is estimated the true figure may be 2 to 3 times higher. In Liberia, a slowdown has recently been noted, with fewer burials and some empty beds in treatment centres, but experts say the numbers could easily rise again. Drug and vaccine trials are being expedited and will start in the outbreak countries in December. But the epidemic is still far from under control. I asked David Heyman, Professor of Infectious Disease Epidemiology at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine and Head of the Centre on Global Health Security at Chatham House, what part the poor healthcare system of Sierra Leone, Liberia and Guinea had played in the epidemic.
Well, I think it's important to look at other countries which also have very weak health systems, such as Zaire, Democratic Republic of Congo today, and other countries where Ebola has occurred. The difference is not so much that it's in urban areas with weak infrastructure, it's that it wasn't stopped when it was still rural. In rural areas where there's better community organization, village elders, village chiefs, traditional systems which help people better understand the cause of the disease and how to prevent spread, where the Red Cross and Red Crescent societies can work very freely to transport dead bodies and to transport patients and to spray the environment where patients have been held, and also where contact tracing is easier and patient identification isolation also easier, it's more easy to stop an outbreak, and all previous outbreaks have been stopped in rural areas. These outbreaks did enter capital cities. An outbreak in 1995 in Zaire at that time entered Kinshasa, a city of 9 million, but the government was ready to jump on it right away with support from international partners, and it didn't spread. Now in West Africa, it's in countries which have really struggled to rebuild their health systems in urban areas and in rural areas, and where there's not so much trust as there is in these rural communities, and as a result, it's been very difficult to stop the outbreak in these countries.
And are such outbreaks predictable? Should we have been able to foresee the Ebola crisis?
When an Ebola outbreak occurs, it's caused by a random event. It's an event that no one can predict. It's an event that gets the virus, which is in an animal or in a bat, into a human, and then within the human population, it spreads from person to person. This is non-predictable, although many people would like to be able to predict using genetic sequences or other information about organisms that are carried by animals. To date, it's not been possible to predict when and where an outbreak will occur.
There was a time when it was said that infectious diseases were all but conquered. Will we ever get to that position, do you think?
Well, I think that was a premature statement back in the 1960s, and it's clear that we never will get to that position, because even if we do deal with all infectious diseases and have drugs and vaccines, there's still the problem of antimicrobial resistance to the drugs we use to treat them. There's a problem of mutation and escape from protection from one vaccine, a whole series of things that will maintain infectious diseases as a problem, but hopefully in developing countries, not the problem that it is today, where over a third of the population dies from infectious disease.
So with no predictability and the certain occurrence of infectious disease, we can only try to best prepare ourselves and vulnerable countries by mobilising organisations and governments to put in place strong healthcare systems, something which we have failed to do. I spoke to Moga Kamoliani, Senior Health and Policy Advisor at Oxfam.
It's a complicated situation, really, but
if you had had a good health system with trained health workers, I think we would have picked up the outbreak earlier and dealt with it earlier. But the fact that particularly the three countries have very weak health system, very few doctors for the population they have, and they're not trained, really made it very difficult to control the spread.
That would be the case throughout other countries in West Africa too, I'm assuming.
Yes, it is. I mean, if you look at Sierra Leone, for example, the population of Sierra Leone is 6 million. Then you have 136 doctors for the 6 million. Likelihood is that the majority of them will be in the capital and major cities, and then you have rural areas where the spread happened with hardly any doctors. In Liberia, we have 51 doctors for a population of 4.4 million people. Neighboring countries will be more or less the same, you know, hovering around these figures. And also, it's not just the sheer number of health workers, but it's also their training, and it's also where they are. You know, like Nigeria, for example, they controlled Ebola because the patient who had Ebola was in a big city. You had a hospital, you had a lab, you had a doctor who knew what they were doing. While if it was in rural area, then we, you know, it would be out of control.
I presume in a rural area, you could quite easily miss Ebola, couldn't you? Because you'd have people turning up with fever. You'd then have people dying in a fairly horrible way. But it wouldn't necessarily mean that a doctor who knew what it was would see it.
Yeah, exactly, because in rural areas we have less numbers of health workers and they're not trained to diagnose Ebola. I mean, the fact is, this is the first time we have Ebola in West Africa. So it's a new disease, it's unknown for these people. You know, once we, like the country or WHO or somebody recognize here is an Ebola infection coming in these countries, then, you know, we don't have the people to train or to diagnose Ebola. We don't have the labs where you can send samples and actually get an accurate diagnosis. And we don't have the facility to look to isolate the patient and look after it. We don't have the gears for the health workers to protect themselves. So it's a lot more than just number of health workers, which are important, but also other parts of the health system are not there or are very weak anyway.
So what are the risks? Professor Heyman again.
Well, in a world where there's an infectious disease in one country with globalization, the whole world is vulnerable to that infectious disease. So this disease could spread anywhere. What's important is that all countries have in place a system that will enable their general practitioners or their primary healthcare staff to know when a fever comes in from West Africa what to do, to determine whether or not this person might have Ebola, to get the testing done, and to isolate them if there's Ebola. And at the same time, hospitals must be prepared with the protective equipment and other supplies necessary to make sure that it doesn't spread in hospitals and cause community outbreaks by leaving hospitals with health workers into the community.
I asked Moga whether very extensive improvements to health systems are needed.
Yes, and we must really remember that, okay, this time is Ebola. It did surprise the whole world because it never happened in West Africa. It was always Democratic Republic of Congo and Uganda, and now totally different strain. We don't know what will happen tomorrow. We don't know what else around the corner in terms of other viruses and other infections and all that. On top of the current health situation, you know, the current disease profile, you've got these outbreaks. So it does definitely need a new way or a different way of thinking, not just at a national level, but also at a global level. And a few days ago, the president of Liberia, she called for the donors to help them by investing in strengthening their health system over a long time. And as you know, a health system, you can't just press a button and then you have doctors and nurses. You have to invest in years in education, which is not health system, that's education, so that you have the people whom you can train to be healthcare managers, planners, financial officers, on top of doctors and nurses and lab technicians and midwives and community health workers and all that. Once the outbreak is controlled, okay, how do we build on what we learned from the outbreak? You know, all these community workers that are being trained now that to deal with it, how we can get these people to be part of the health system and to improve their ability. Meantime, while we're training other health workers, while we are building rural health units and small hospitals in towns, you know, like a referral center, while we're building information system. So it really needs good planning and a good political commitment for long term. So we need governments and donors to say, here's the 5 years plan or even 10 years plan if we can for the health system, let's say in Sierra Leone. We will do that in year one, in year two, in year three. It will cost that amount. Sierra Leone can mobilize that amount of money, and then the rest should come from donors. And then so-and-so will provide the technical assistance to help them to go through it. If we don't do this really good, concrete planning and concrete financial assistance to the countries, then the worry is that once Ebola goes from the headlines, then we're back to square one until we have next outbreak.
So when it comes to the World Health Organization, it is said that mistakes were made, that they were too slow in their response. Do you think that's true? And if so, what was the reason for it?
To be honest, I think everybody was slow, including WHO. Now, for WHO, there's like a complicated set of reasons. I mean, one thing for the slowness of everybody is that, Ebola in West Africa? So it's like, strange, and somehow it took everybody time to react. For the WHO itself, there's a number of reasons. One is the funding of the WHO, which is not a sudden thing. It's been a problem simmering for the past many years. And funding WHO is a problem in two ways. One, the quantity of funding. The whole budget for WHO is like the budget of a big hospital, say in the UK or in the US. So, it's not gigantic funding. It's like funding one hospital. So that amount has not increased as the responsibility of WHO and the problems with global health have become more complicated and more demanding on WHO. So the absolute amount of funding is a problem. But the other thing is how the funding is given to WHO. So over the years, earmarked funding has been increasing at the expense of general budget support. So, donors pick, and that's countries and others, they pick up the programs or the departments that they like and they fund them. So you have more money in a particular department or in a particular function and nothing in the next door. And part of this next door was the global health security. So the funding for picking up outbreaks and dealing with outbreaks has decreased. And therefore, the number of experts in these areas have decreased. People just either walked out or they were sacked.
And indeed, the world seems to have been jolted awake to this shocking situation. At the recent World Bank IMF meeting, Christine Lagarde, head of the IMF, said that this was clearly an instance when donors must rally round and that the UN estimates it will take around $1 billion to stop the outbreak. The three leaders of Guinea, Liberia and Sierra Leone pleaded for speedy action. Here is President Ernest Bai Koroma of Sierra Leone.
The general international response has up to this moment been slower than the rate of transmission of the disease. This slower than the virus response need to change. I hereby seek the acceleration of the translation of commitments to physical facts on the ground. That is what is urgently needed now. Commitments on paper and commitments during meetings are good, but commitments as physical facts on the ground are best.
And UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon made clear the urgent need for the injection of finances from donors worldwide.
Cases are growing exponentially. We need at least, as I said, 20-fold the surge in assistance. Mobile laboratories, vehicles, helicopters, protective equipment, trained medical personnel and medevac capabilities. We must work together to provide the best standard of care for each individual. Things will get worse before they get better. How much worse depends on us, the international community. So to all who have pledged I say today, please deliver now. And for those who have yet to pledge, I say today, please do so soon. That's my urgent appeal.
I asked Dr. Marie-Paul Kieny, Assistant Director General for Health Systems and Innovation at the WHO, whether she felt shortages of money had affected the organisation's response to the Ebola outbreak.
Well, certainly, because over the past years and since the end of the pandemic, if I may say, where the teams which were involved in outbreak response and pandemic preparedness at that time before the pandemic have been quite well resourced. But in the aftermath of a pandemic, there has been certainly shortages of funds there. And these teams have been decimated, if I may say. So we have not had as much operational capacity as we have had a decade ago, let's say.
So what needs to happen in the future, both in the countries and also at the WHO? You need stronger healthcare systems, clearly, in countries like Sierra Leone, don't you?
Yes, absolutely. This is something which is very important, and we are working on it also in the, you know, that the World Health Organization is promoting, upon request of a member state, universal health coverage. And to be able to walk towards universal health coverage, you need to have decent and functional health systems. So we need also to integrate a bit more the different parts of health systems, because when you look at experts or the people working in time of peace, if I may say, they see their health system as the one who does vaccination and surgery and, you know, taking care of mother and child health. And you have the other part of the health system, which is the one which is seen by the people who do infectious disease. And they have always the impression that actually the health system which responds to infectious disease is not the same, whereas it is the same. And in country, there are only so many people who are dealing with that. So what we need to do, and the change that we need to make, I think, when we talk to country about health systems, is to have this integration, saying all these pieces belong to the same system. So if you try to reinforce health system for universal health coverage, you need also to make sure that in doing this, you also reinforce them in order to be able to detect infectious disease and to be able to control outbreaks.
Does that mean more, I presume that means more physicians, more nurses, more facilities as well, doesn't it?
It does, but it does also mean more surveillance. You know, there's a lot of things that can be done in a health systems also, not only by doctors and nurses. You can have mid-level and lower-level cadres or technicians who can do quite a lot of this work also. So we have to rethink the health systems that we have.
It's going to be a massive rebuilding project. I heard somebody estimating that just to restore Liberia's health system would cost something like $2 billion or something enormous.
These numbers are just appalling when you think about it.
Yes. Do you think that the money and the willpower will be there to do this?
Well, I hope so, because as you know, quite often when the limelight has gone somewhere else, then promises are forgotten and pledges are not always followed by action. But I really hope that it will not be the case. You know, it's not only when we discuss about rebuilding the health systems in Liberia, Guinea and Sierra Leone, it's not only rebuilding them, because they were really crappy. So you don't want to rebuild them. You need to build them differently. You see, in low-income countries, when they make progress, they don't always use the same tools as we have been using in high-income countries. For example, e-health and everything which is to information and communication technology is something that some of them are able to use fantastically to remedy for the small number of competent doctors, and also the fact that they have remote areas which are very poorly served. So the rebuilding needs to be with other ingredients than what we had before.
Certainly what we need to do is make sure that WHO has the resources right and its priorities right. You know, even if there's a decrease in resources in an organization, the prioritization is what's important. Sunsetting or stopping certain programs that aren't a priority and moving resources to others that might be a priority. In that prioritization process, it's always difficult because there are interests of various countries for their goals and their desires and their needs, and it's very difficult to come to a consensus on what really is a priority and what isn't. So many times, all activities remain, but just at a decreased level of funding.
Would you like to see a stronger World Health Organization?
Yes, I think the World Health Organization is incredibly important in the world. And if it can be strengthened to do the job as it has done in the past, then I think it's a very important organization to maintain. There's no other organization that looks out for the health of developing countries as does WHO.
It's a worry about once it goes from the headlines, what will happen? It will be just WHO speaking in empty space because once the media starts talking about something else, whether it's health or Afghanistan or Iraq or something, then governments in the rich countries start talking about that thing and forget about Ebola. And it's nice to forget about it, because if you forget about it, you don't have any commitment, or you just put little amount of money and that's it, you know, wash your hands. And that's what we're worried about. We're worried about donors, community washing their hands from West Africa until next stage. And the other thing that we're worried about now is that the focus is on the three countries that are affected. But it doesn't seem to be donors' help going into the neighboring countries where there's a threat. I mean, now that there is a case in Mali, they have the time to prepare now, but I don't know if they have the support, whether it's support technically, whether it's with gears and material, staff, or money.
So who would actually take the lead with this? Who could go to, say, Mali and say, we will help you put in all the infrastructure and so on that you need to prevent this happening? Is that going to be, again, it won't be WHO, will it? It has to be the donors, because they have the money, they have the ability to help. But who would do it?
Actually, WHO is trying to help some of these countries with whatever they have. I mean, they do have country people. The UN is, you know, set up this system of coordination, and that should be working. Whether that system would take the lead in talking with the donors and say, right, okay, you know, maybe France would help Senegal, maybe, I don't know, the UK would help Cote d'Ivoire or somebody else. So, that UN coordinating Ebola response coordination can take the lead in organizing the donors around supporting the countries.
The need for change may be there, but how hopeful are organisations such as Oxfam that it will happen, and that both governments and the WHO will take responsibility for seeing it through?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I'm not sure if member states really took notice of what's going on and really taking their responsibility for that situation rather than just blaming WHO. I think that's the critical thing. Will the member states, particularly the donors, particularly the ones who have money, you know, because developing countries are interested in funding WHO, but they don't have the money to do it. But the people who don't seem to be interested in empowering WHO, if you like, are the ones who have the money. So you've got this paradoxical situation. And just remember, you know, this funding, that the total budget of WHO rather than earmarked, I mean, basically, it doesn't mean that you're giving the funding and say, right, okay, you run with it, do whatever you like. It's not like that. Because WHO's one, as you know, it's probably unique in the global system, in the UN system, in terms of it's governed by its members. So the member states, via the World Health Assembly, actually decide on the plan for WHO. So for the next 2 years, you're going to do this and that and the other. But then the budget doesn't match the plan.
Do we need better leadership at the WHO? And surely it should be their role to push through or to assist with the reconstruction of healthcare in these affected countries and to bolster them. So, you know, if it has to be done, if we have to rebuild the healthcare systems of Sierra Leone and Liberia and Guinea, it should be WHO that pushes that ahead, surely.
WHO is not an implementing agency, so they're not going to build the health system in Sierra Leone or in any country. But they have this advocacy, if you like, policy function of saying why this is important, how you could do it, you know, guiding the country in doing it and making it a serious global issue, if you like. For that, WHO need to have the capacity to do this. Yes, it does need very strong leadership to do that. But don't forget the role of the donors. WHO is always kind of taking it easy with the big donors because they're the ones who give the money. Until that changes, you know, it's very difficult. You put the leadership in difficult situation. Whoever is there, you know, if they speak loud, they upset the donor, then they might be threatened by not being funded or, more earmarked and less budget. So it's a very tricky situation. But we certainly need strong leadership that can stand against all the donors, commercial and other interests.
And did Dr. Kearney think there is a need to strengthen the WHO?
Absolutely, that's going to be very important also, certainly. And I think we need also to understand how to better ourselves get organized. But clearly, the fact that we receive not enough funding, but also the money that we receive is quite often highly earmarked. So this says that we receive money which is to do one project or another project and cannot be used for anything else. So the way we are financed and the way we operate has been a subject of much debate by our member states for many years. So I hope that this and other elements will help them think of how they can make sure that the organization is fit for purpose.
In a way, that discussion needs to happen now, doesn't it, while the world's attention is on this particular crisis?
Absolutely.
That brings us to the end of this edition of the Global Development Podcast. Don't forget, you can have your say at theguardian.com/global-development. Just click the link to the podcast. My name is Sarah Bosley. The producer was Eva Krisiak. Until next time, goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to theguardian.com/audio.